Tonight on Life on the Rock, we have Rachel Hoover Canto, Part 1, I'll Give a Reflection, and much more. Welcome to Life on the Rock. Tonight, our guest is Rachel Hoover Canto. She's written a book called Pretty Good Catholic, How to Find, Date, and Marry Someone Who Shares Your Faith.
And this is the first of two shows with her, and we're now going to a reflection with Father Mark.
Wisdom 13:5 says, "For from the greatness and beauty of created things comes a corresponding perception of their Creator." When we see something beautiful in nature, there's something arresting about it. There's something surprising about it. There's something about it that gives us peace. And maybe because we perceive the Creator, His works, that through seeing His works, we're drawn, we experience a closeness to Him. Creation comes directly from the hand of God for us. It's there to nurture us and to lead us to Him. It helps us. It just gives us peace, gives us stillness. It kind of just pulls us out of ourselves to see something so beautiful and majestic as a snow-capped mountain. May we take the time to spend in nature and to let it lift our hearts and minds to praise and thanks God. Well, Rachel Hoover Canto, welcome to Life on the Rock.
Thank you for having me.
You've written a great book. I really enjoyed it. It's called Pretty Good Catholic, How to Find, Date, and Marry Someone Who Shares Your Faith. And I wanted to have you on because I think this is such a vital, absolutely forefront topic for our faith, our culture, everything. I mean, if marriage peace is right and healthy, everything, I feel like everything else will fall into place so many ways, you know. Even addressing big problems in the culture, you know, happens better in a healthy marriage culture. So what was your motivation in writing it?
I pretty much wrote the book that I felt I needed for myself when I was younger because I went through my years of singleness, getting into relationships, going through tough breakups, discerning whether I'm even called to marriage at all, long periods of time where it just seemed like there's nobody to date. I don't even know how to meet somebody. And yeah. I saw my siblings and my friends all running into the same difficulties. And so I decided eventually to just pull together all the best advice I could find from real married couples, mm-hmm. as well as matchmakers and psychologists and priests and anybody who had some light to shed on this subject, and just put it all together in one place, mm-hmm. so that hopefully other people don't have to go through quite all the same difficulties, or at least they have a guide or a companion as they go through those difficulties and find their spouse.
Yeah. And did you grow up in a devout Catholic home?
I did. My parents were converts when I was 4, so from Protestantism. So they were very on fire about their Catholic faith when I was young.
And you went to Christendom College, which is like a very pro-marriage college, and mm-hmm. I imagine everybody there is talking about marriage, probably.
Yes. The joke is that you go to find a spouse more so. The education is excellent. I'm very glad I went there, even though I did not meet my spouse there, and God had a different plan.
Yeah. Right. So you speak of the book. It's hopefully a realistic guide for single Catholics or dating and discerning relationships. And I like that realistic aspect, because sometimes it seems like we try to force a model. It might be an anachronistic form of dating culture or something. But and you stay true to that, what I saw in the book, to make it realistic, like in correspondence to our nature and our how we're made and things. Was that a big effort for you?
Yes. I think I saw in myself and others around me kind of the different extremes. There's the extreme that our culture gives us right now, where it's you date just for fun, it's hookup mm-hmm. culture, it's all those things that most people who are picking up a book called Pretty Good Catholic know that all of that is bad, and they're trying to avoid it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we swing to the opposite extreme, and people talk about, you know, they just decide, they make up something that they call traditional Catholic courtship or whatever, and say, this is the way everybody should be doing it. And it's usually something with a lot of rules and sort of a very formulaic way of doing things. And most other people you meet are not already filled in on that way of doing things, so it just causes a lot of conflict. And so I wanted to kind of strike the happy medium and say, we can use the word dating or courtship, whatever term you want to use. It's okay to just, as a young adult, meet people in a safe public place, just have a chat over coffee or ice cream or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. You can even do that with several people at once for a little bit till you get to know those people well enough to decide if you're going to really discern marriage. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are also the teachings that the church and scripture give us on how to do this safely and just what marriage really is. Ultimately, right. The goal should be marriage and not just casual dating forever.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the title, Pretty Good Catholic. Now, you're a Christendom grad, so you're like, you're top echelon Catholic, right?
Striving. I think it was actually the editor who originally suggested that title, and I said, oh, it's perfect, because I wanted to show that this book is not about perfection. There's not one perfect right way to do everything. Mm-hmm. You also are looking for someone who's good, you know, morally, and also pretty or attractive. It's good to have that desire. And so it's kind of a play on words a little bit. A pretty good Catholic is what we're all looking for.
Yeah, and that comes up a lot. There's a discussion of, I don't want to settle, or... And there's a things, yeah, there are non-negotiable and stuff, but sometimes our standards for being pretty enough or being good enough or whatever, it can be too much, right? And people come in with a list of what they want, especially women, right? They oftentimes make the list. But talk about that list, because you're not a big fan of it, are you?
Sure. So I actually had gone to a talk when I was in college at Christendom. The chaplain gave this lovely talk for the women on campus, and he said, if you're like most people, most women, you have the list. And we all kind of giggled and looked around each other like, oh. Mm-hmm. You know, and I really had written down my husband list before. Yeah. Not everyone writes it down, but it's sort of a mental list. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's encouraged in Christian cultures because we're supposed to have high, strong standards for who our husband is going to be. And I think there's a good instinct there, but too many of the items on the list are usually what should be considered preferences, not standards.
Right.
So standards, the things we really need to hold on to are, does this person really love God and pursue holiness? Is this person capable of like good communication, humility, acknowledging if they're wrong, all those basic things that really make for a good marriage for the long term?
And a relationship period of any
right,
kind.
Yes. Yeah. So those are standards. Yeah. And then preferences are anything from the very shallow, you know, 6 feet tall, this much in his bank account, you know, sort of the stereotype. Yeah. But even for me, I thought I wanted someone who had kind of a more introverted personality, for example, because that's kind of how I am, and I was drawn to it. And then I realized that doesn't actually work when I get into a relationship with someone else like that. Yeah. So I had to let go of that preference and most of my list and just say, God, I want you to bring into my life whoever you think would actually be best for me, whoever will really make me happy and holy, and kind of have a more open mind. And then as I started to get to know these gentlemen, you know, by just going on a few dates, I could see if those standards were kind of starting to show through or if he really didn't match up with that. And my husband was not really my type initially, or so I thought. He didn't meet all of those more shallow preferences that I had. I was just sharing beforehand that, you know, he wears earrings, he has tattoos. I was looking for a much more clean cut kind of, wears a suit and bow tie kind of guy. Yeah. But his personality is actually so perfect for me. He's very much a man of God. He's searching for holiness. He wanted a good marriage, a happy family. So all the standards lined up, all our major goals in life lined up. And I just had to give him a chance and get past those more shallow preferences in order to know that about him. So the list that we should set aside is those preferences, but then do hold fast to the standards and just letting God guide us, you know, am I actually happier and holier around this person or not? Sometimes you just need to be around the person to know that.
And you make the point in the book that, the woman's the one childbearing, you know, feeding the child and caring for the child. And so it's like she comes into it with a lot of concerns about that, you know, and just doing that successfully, right? So, you know, sociologists have pointed out that, you know, just women are hardwired to choose a spouse that they feel like just can make this work or be the protector, defender, you know, in more primitive cultures maybe where there was a greater, you know, unevenness to the genders. But I think women are hardwired to discern that, and you uphold in the book about the men pursuing the woman, and it's almost like, you know, she's choosing kind of the best possibility here, one that fits. So I thought that was a powerful part, because I really think that's true. So many ways.
It can be a little controversial in our culture, right? That I do say it's recommended. It's probably going to work out better if the man is the one who asks for the first date, the first several dates, really, who's overall usually the one planning the dates. If he's the one who starts that conversation, like, let's be exclusive, let's be boyfriend and girlfriend, I want you to meet my family. And then, of course, I think we still accept in our culture that he's usually the one to propose, right? So it just all flows toward that very naturally. Yeah. And even in marriage, I've realized in almost 2 years of marriage that my husband does need to kind of wear the pants in the family. He needs to be the head of the household, the leader, in a very respectful and gentle and collaborative way, right? And so that should be modeled in the relationship. Yeah. There are exceptions. I know people who, you know, their marriage started off because the woman was the one to kind of make the first move. But it still only seems to work well if the guy pretty quickly kind of took over that pursuer role a little bit more and became proactive. Because if he just stays passive the whole time, most women don't actually like that.
It puts a lot of stress on the woman.
It's so much to plan everything, you know, and if you can just sit back and relax. Some matchmakers I know are very in favor of that. They say you're more feminine when you can just relax and let him take the lead and let him make the plans. And then he's attracted to that. And it's actually this beautiful dynamic that happens between the two.
Yeah. And it seems like the male psychology needs to be fired up, you know, you need to get motivated and everything.
Men need a challenge usually. Yeah, yes. They don't want a woman who just kind of comes and stands, you know, right on his doorstep and says, hey, I'm here. You know, they like to have to do a little something to prove themselves,
right,
I think.
Right. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with Rachel Hoover Canto. Okay, we've spoken about being careful about just limiting to a certain type. We need to open our mind. I always like to say, too, what do we really know when we're 21, 22 years old? I know my thinking has changed so much. You know, I had a conversion experience and everything. So, yeah, we have to have some standards that are non-negotiable, but not to be too limiting. But what I really loved about this first part of the book, and this is the thing I most hear, is I can't meet anybody. You know, Father, there's no good Catholic men or no good Catholic women around. And you put this out in the book that you challenge people to, one, just meet people and to default to the yes. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I think oftentimes we are, I guess, not maximizing all our resources when it comes to meeting new people. So a lot of us just go to work, go home, you know, do the same things every week. And when I was writing this book, I read a book by Dr. Henry Cloud called How to Get a Date Worth Keeping. And he challenges his readers to meet 5 new single people every week, which sounds like a lot, but it really gets you thinking, well, where can I meet those people? I got to start doing something new. Maybe I need to reinvigorate, you know, an old hobby that I used to be interested in, or I need to even try a new parish in my area just for one Bible study or something and see if that interests me. And it gets you out of the house a little more. Right, it gets you mingling with people. And online counts. I think you can meet people online as well. That's a good tool that a lot of people are using as their primary tool now. But I don't think it's a total replacement for just those serendipitous meetings in person either. So I encourage people to kind of do both. Seek out any purpose-built singles events in your area, any, you know, young Catholic adult groups of some sort, or just anything you're interested in. For some reason, there are a lot of Catholics who do ballroom dancing, swing dancing, salsa dancing, things like that. So I said, maybe give that a try. You'll probably run into somebody else who's wearing a crucifix and say, oh, what church do you go to? Right, and it's a way to break the ice. So,
And you speak about not just staying in your tribe. I imagine that may be an issue like in bigger cities that has a larger Catholic population. But what kind of tribes are out there that you're thinking of?
I'm mostly thinking of those different sort of camps or tribes within the Catholic Church where you know, maybe it's liturgical preference. Oh, I only go to the traditional Latin Mass, mm-hmm. or, you know, I go to praise and worship nights, or I'm mm-hmm. charismatic, or that type of thing, mm-hmm. where people kind of have their unique flavor of being right, Catholic. Right. And usually they want to find someone who's kind of within that flavor, or at least very adjacent to it. Mm-hmm. And I understand that instinct. I'm pretty traditional leaning myself. I definitely had a time period where I thought I got to meet a guy who already, you know, goes to Latin Mass. And then I realized that as long as it's something that is officially under the Catholic umbrella, there's something wrong with it, mm-hmm. we should be a little more flexible. You know, if you're looking for someone who's a really devout Catholic, yeah. that's already limiting you from a lot of people in the world, right? It's a smaller pool.
Yeah.
So if you further limit it by, okay, age and all these other things, and then down to the specific flavor of Catholicism, well, now your pool is this big. And, you know, so it's good to branch out a little bit. Yeah. And who knows, if you really love the you know, charismatic Mass you go to, or the traditional Latin Mass you go to, you can just invite this person that you're seeing and say, I love this. I would love to introduce you mm-hmm. to it. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about it, and then see what happens. I think God can really work through that to bring someone to something new that they weren't aware of that can be really helpful for them. Or you change and grow too through mm-hmm. a relationship. That's the sign of a good relationship, really, is that both people are growing in their faith, growing closer to God, growing in just their mm-hmm. happiness and their relationship skills and everything. And so, yeah, we shouldn't be seeing someone else as the applicant to the position of being my spouse with mm-hmm. all these criteria, so much as, here's who I am, I'm sharing this with yeah. you. Who are you? Share that with me. And then let's see if that lines up and see where God's taking us.
And what about just marrying outside of the Catholic Church, you know, devout Protestant brothers and sisters? Or, mm-hmm. I guess, obviously, you want to find a person of faith, and what do you tell people about that issue?
That's a difficult one, because a lot of people ask me, okay, I keep meeting these really wonderful, great guys, girls who are, you know, so on fire, they love Jesus, yeah. but they're not Catholic. Right. And I think I would be very, very cautious of marrying someone who's mm-hmm. not Catholic, because mm-hmm. there are a lot of things that even our Protestant brothers and sisters just don't agree on that are very right. important for marriage. Right. Not everyone agrees on, say, birth control, divorce, all these things.
Yeah.
And so, at the same time, I think God often works to convert someone through a relationship.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I wouldn't be totally closed off to just going on a few dates and kind of seeing what's their level of openness.
Yeah.
I don't think you should go in saying, I'm going to date this person in order to convert him, because that's mm-hmm. that puts a lot of pressure on the relationship. It's very manipulative sometimes. But
missionary dating.
Exactly. Right? But if you're going in saying, I'm just going to get to know this person, and I'm going to stay close to God myself, stay close to my Catholic faith, you should always have a firm boundary. You're never going to miss Sunday Mass. You are never going to do anything that goes against the Catholic Church for this person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be very firm in your own faith and be willing to just share that joyfully. And then if they are not open to it at all, it's probably time to move on. But if they're genuinely interested, then maybe continue forward. And there are those marriages out there where it's a Catholic and a Protestant and it works out well, but I think that's pretty rare. The stats on whether the children remain Catholic or remain Christian at all are very scary.
Mm-hmm.
I realized in one Pew study, they showed that if there was a Catholic parent and a Protestant parent, as adults, the children of that marriage were about equal parts Catholic, Protestant, or no faith at all. So having those two different faiths in the house seems to lead about 30% to just give up on faith entirely, because maybe they're confused about it. Yeah. Hard to tell what's going on there, but I would be very cautious of it personally.
Right, right. And you also talk about defaulting to yes. So we said just get out there and meet people. And you even suggested in the book, okay, 5 people a week, that might be a much, but at least maybe one person.
Start small.
Start small. But to default to the yes, what do you mean by that?
So a lot of Catholics I've found, maybe particularly women, but I think men too, will meet a bunch of new people at the young adult group or whatever, and they tend to sort of hover and do their research for a long time, be very hesitant to actually go on a date with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you've gone on a date with someone, most people around you think that this is super serious and that you're off limits to everybody else or something.
Yeah.
So it's very high pressure. But I encourage people to, again, kind of set aside the shallower preferences and get over the fear a little bit and just plunge into a date. Default to saying yes, unless you have a really strong reason to say no.
Yeah.
Instead of everybody's a no unless I have a really strong reason to say yes. Those are kind of, you know, two sides of it. And so that way, I think everyone just gets to go on more dates, which mm-hmm. most Catholics who are marriage-minded are looking for.
Yeah.
And that way, eventually, it takes the pressure off a little bit. Like, well, I'm open to one date with anybody unless I see a really strong reason not to means you know, I'm just getting to know different people. I'm not going to get too intimate, you know, emotionally or physically on these dates. We're just going to have a coffee or something and chat a little bit and see if there's any potential here. It's really, you're building a little bit of a friendship with the understanding that this may blossom into romance later, rather than it's all or nothing. You know, we're nothing to each other, and then all of a sudden we're deep in the thick of this relationship. Because then the breakup is so devastating when it comes, and it's so hard to kind of heal and move on and start over. And doing that repeatedly can be really unhealthy.
Yeah. Well, Rachel, thank you so much. We're going to do a second show with you to go deeper into the book with some other issues. Especially, I want to talk about advice to men out there. But thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, as I mentioned, I think Rachel has written a great book, and it's it really reads well. It's meaty, and she's logical and things. So I recommend the book.
Yeah.
What did you think of the interview, brother?
Well, I thought it was great, and I think a book like this is well needed, especially if you're high school, college, young adult, because I think a lot of people run into everything she was talking about on the show in one way or another. So I think it's very relevant for today, especially in our culture and society, because we can be pulled in so many different directions. But I do think just the big overarching question of, you know, is this person right for me? What are we, you know, what should I be looking for? And those are big questions to ask. And, you know, just to have that attraction, chemistry, compatibility, you know, do I like talking to this person?
Yeah.
You know, so I thought, you know, even just kind of those short dates of just 2 hours, you know, I think you get a pretty good sense of, you know, whether this will work or not. But I think, too, there's a struggle out there because there's a lot of woundedness as well. There's sin in the world. And so there is that struggle to put ourselves out there.
Right. And that needs to be done. I mean, we cooperate with God's grace. We can't just wait for God to present someone to us, you know. And he does. I think she made the point that, you know, following God, having that relationship with God, praying. I mean, the Catechism talks about we can merit friendship. You know, we can pray and ask for friendship, pray and ask for a spouse. But I think in particular for the woman, maybe not to be too picky about things that don't matter. And for the guy, sometimes I think today what I've heard on the show from other guests is they want to get everything just right. They're really worried about the financial stuff. And and at some point, you got to trust God with this, and that he's a providential father. It's a sacrament. He's going to give you what you need to live this sacrament.
Yeah.
And it's a path to holiness. We didn't make that point tonight, but this is a path to holiness. He's going to be present in that. He's going to be guiding you, strengthening you. So it's not all up to you to find the absolute perfect match of compatibility, right? Because you're going to have differences. You're going to be incompatible on some levels.
Yeah.
But God's grace is there to help you.
And again, there's a lot of grace involved too. But also, like you said, it's a pathway to sanctification, you know, and we're going to learn a lot about ourselves. But I think too, marriage also helps, you know, in many ways, men grow up.
Right.
Boys, you know, become men, fathers, and husbands, spouses. And I think, again, because it draws us out of ourselves, that type of relationship. So it's very foundational for society and the church, and just our own personal interactions.
So if you're called to religious life, you have to get out there and visit communities and different orders, see what fits. If you feel like you're called to marriage, you got to get out there and date. Don't make too big a deal out of it, but test the waters. Go out with different people and discern and try to pray and have conversations, you know, and be open to maybe where God's leading you. So we'll send you to that vineyard with a blessing. May our Heavenly Father shine His face upon you. May He give you His peace. May He send His Holy Spirit into your hearts to guide you in your vocation and to strengthen you in discernment. May God bless you, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. We'll see you next week on Life on the Rock.
Step out on the water. Now I'm walking on the top of the waves. With you inside, I'm getting closer. My eyes are locked up in your gaze. I look away at the storm that surrounds me and I become so afraid. why are